The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very, very good morning to you. You know, we can't trust the Nati anymore because she keeps telling us that there's a ceasefire, but it doesn't appear as though there is one. What is really going on in Israel?
Well, I don't blame Zanati at all, Howard, because we're all as confused as she is. The reports have said that there is a ceasefire, or at least that a ceasefire came to into existence this morning at 5:30 a.m. It has not been confirmed by the Israeli government. Israeli news is reporting it coming from Arab sources. We understand that the Egyptians actually have made an announcement that they succeeded in brokering a ceasefire. However, the rocket fire has unfortunately continued. Most recently, as about a half an hour ago, even less than half an hour ago, sirens were being sounded in that Gaza envelope area. The region around the Gaza Strip, Netiv HaAsara, was the latest to send residents into bomb shelters once again. There were a few barrages this morning before that, but after the 5:30 a.m. time, when the ceasefire apparently would have come into existence, if indeed there is a ceasefire. Also, a number of barrages of rockets last night, going quite late into the night. Overall, something like 400 rockets having been fired towards Israel over the last 2 days. And unbelievably, no Israeli deaths at all. A few people were injured. Most people injured as a result of anxiety or as a result of getting injured while running to safe, secure areas. There were some reports of an elderly lady who was hit by shards of glass when there was an explosion near to an old age facility. It's not always clear when these pieces, when things fall from the sky and people claim that they are rocket hits. It's not always clear whether indeed they are rocket hits, because I saw a number of cases last night in the Ashkelon and Ashdod area where people were reporting rocket hits, when in fact what it turns out to be is that it's just shrapnel that's falling as a result of the interceptions that took place in the area in the skies above. And of course, once that Iron Dome missile intercepts with the incoming rocket, the shrapnel has to go somewhere. The rocket explodes at that point and the shrapnel falls from the sky. And while the Iron Dome algorithms do try as far as possible to direct the interceptions to take place in skies above open areas rather than built up areas, either over the sea or over pieces of you know, land which are not inhabited, unfortunately, that is not always possible, as a result of which shrapnel does unfortunately come down within populated areas. And we saw that last night, both in Ashkelon and in Ashdod. Fortunately, people have not been injured by these incidents. And in most cases, people are adhering to the instructions by the Home Front Command and are going to their secure rooms, going to their shelters, their bomb shelters, because when we think about the layers of security that cover Israel in terms of protecting the population, the civilian population, then we have obviously different levels of anti-missile systems, including the Iron Dome, which currently is the one that's being used the most. But part of those, one of those layers of security is that civilians go to their bomb shelters. That's a very, very important layer of our security. And if civilians aren't prepared to do that, then we lose a great deal of our security because of people not being willing to adhere to those requirements. So we've seen a number of reports already of people whose lives have been saved because they adhered to the instructions, because they went to their safe rooms, because they went to their bomb shelters, they closed the windows, they carried out whatever they were required to do. And those actions can save lives and do save lives. So, you know, people are really encouraged to adhere to those instructions. Yesterday, there was back to school for most of the schools in the central part of Israel. Only schools within 40 kilometers of the Gaza Strip were asked to cease their activities and for the children to stay home. Businesses, of course, also were closed. Some businesses because the employees couldn't come, were looking after children at home. Some because the business themselves decided to close down. And instruction from Home Front, the Home Front Command. And of course, This does affect Israel's economy. So this is not a good thing when people are staying at home. And therefore, there is a real attempt to get people back to school and back to work as much as possible. We saw it yesterday in Tel Aviv, despite the fact that there was an expectation that there might even be an increase in activity in terms of the number of rockets that were being fired towards Israel. And even further afield than Tel Aviv, there was that a warning that was issued yesterday alongside the instruction to return back to school and return back to work, which seemed to be slightly contradictory. But, of course, Israel's economy really does need to continue to operate even under these very extreme conditions. And that's why the authorities are looking for every which way to return the schools to normal operation, the universities to studies, and, of course, businesses to keep working, even though we're effectively in a kind of a war situation with so many rockets being fired. So at the moment, it's unclear as to whether there is a ceasefire or not. Those rockets did continue this morning. I expect we'll be waiting for an official announcement from either the Israeli government or the IDF to confirm or deny the existence of a ceasefire. There seems to be no reason why a ceasefire can't be put into place, because I think both parties really wish to avoid any further expansion of this activity. And it was interesting that the three requirements, the three preconditions that the Palestinian Islamic Jihad laid down didn't really seem to be very onerous for Israel to adhere to. They were stop the targeted killings in Gaza and in the West Bank area, which Israel had in any event stopped some time ago, carried out on a one-time basis now. But essentially, this is a policy that has not been followed for quite some time. The second requirement was not to fire or not to attack those people who are carrying out protests along the Gaza border in those Friday March of the Return protests. And I think that Israel can easily say, look, as long as there is no threat to the border guards, to the border itself, to the security, to the fence, to the wall, whatever it is, as long as people are not trying to attack that, then we have no interest at all to try to attack people who are on the Gaza side of the border. And the third precondition is one that I've kind of just forgotten right now, but it seemed to be a very, very insignificant one. And I'll just try to remind myself of it, but it seemed to be something that's very, lifting the siege on Gaza and adhering to the former agreements that were achieved, that were reached in Cairo. Now, I don't know about lifting the siege so much, but certainly those prior agreements that had been reached on Gaza had been adhered to. And I don't see why Israel would have any reason not to return to those agreements, whatever they are, not well publicized, but whatever those agreements are, so long as there's no immediate threat to Israel's security. So I think that's an easy yes, pretty much from Israel. And therefore, in theory, we should have a relatively easy ceasefire. And let's hope that that's the case.
Anthony, one of our listeners, Mike, says when Hamas and Jihad want a Islamic Jihad want a ceasefire, Israel is quick to sign. Why? It doesn't just allow them to rearm. Surely Israel should take an extra 12 hours to wipe out the rocket arsenals before agreeing to a ceasefire. What's your thoughts on that?
It's an interesting take, and I think it's a very valid point of view. I mean, first of all, let's say that Israel has been firing via aeroplanes and via tank fire towards Palestinian Islamic Jihad missile targets within Gaza, and people who were just on the verge of launching long-range missiles were fired towards, and in fact, there have been casualties as a result of Israel's attacks in Gaza. More than 20 Gazans are reported to have been killed as a result of Israel's retaliatory attacks. But I guess, Mike, the question is, how far does Israel can Israel really go? Because as we know, we can't destroy the infrastructure completely. And the reason that we can't destroy the terror infrastructure completely is because it's inhabited by civilians everywhere. And so in order to avoid civilian casualties, Israel is very, very picky and very choosy about the targets that it tries to attack, because it has no interest to escalate the number of civilian casualties. And so therefore, Israel has to really be very selective about the targets that it goes after. And we can't pretend that it would just be easy to take another 12 or 24 hours to destroy all of that. No, I don't think that that's the case. So the question is, how far do we go? What do we hope to achieve? And how do we secure ourselves in the process, because our first priority always is to make sure that Israel's civilians are secure, that they can go home and sleep well at night, that the children don't have to run to bomb shelters in the middle of the night or even in the day, that schools can operate, that businesses can operate, that Israel's economy is unaffected. That's our highest priority. And so another 12, another 24 hours, another 2 days, another 3 days a week really has an impact on all of that. And so those are very, very difficult decisions for our leaders to have to weigh up and to make decisions about, because there's so many conflicting priorities that come into play here. And I don't think that we can really pretend that 12 or 24 hours will really help us to significantly wipe out or significantly damage any further the terror infrastructure that we have been able to reach so far. So it's not an easy decision. And, of course, everybody has their own view about this. So I can understand exactly why Mike is thinking the way he is.
Leslie also saying it's unbelievable. If this happened anywhere else in the world, Gaza would be dust by now. How much should Israel be expected to endure?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a very valid view as well. And I hear it stated a lot that, you know, other countries would not tolerate 400 missiles being fired towards civilian areas under any circumstances.
Interestingly enough, at least it would be on the news. You know, we've barely even seen a hint of it. Zanati, have you seen it across South African news at all?
No.
400 rockets fired at Israel from Gaza. And I certainly haven't seen, certainly I haven't seen it on News 24 and I've been looking.
It's been nowhere.
I haven't seen it anywhere. I mean, it's an incredible thing if you think about it.
Mm-hmm. It is an incredible thing. I hadn't realized that it had so little news coverage in South Africa. I have certainly seen it on other news, but it's not high priority. It's not front page news by any stretch of the imagination. And it would be fair to say that if another country, any number of other countries had to endure such rocket attacks towards civilian population in the way that Israel has to endure over the last 2 days, then there would be a war. And that potentially Gaza would be a car park, as people like to say. I mean, and Israel certainly has the capability to do that. Let's not pretend. However, there is a sensitivity, a massive sensitivity about civilian casualties. Nobody has the desire to go in and destroy an entire swathe of civilian population. Unfortunately, not only does Israel not get much credit for that way of thinking, but in fact, quite the contrary, Israel gets a lot of criticism for some of the individual civilians. I mean, that are potentially are killed or injured in conflicts like this. Those 20 odd people who have been killed in Gaza, by the admission of the Gazans themselves, are all terrorists, people who are involved in the conflict. There's been no collateral damage, as the Americans like to call it. This is all targeted attacks against people who are involved in this conflict, directly involved in the conflict. And that's the way that Israel chooses to fight its wars and to fight its battles, for better or for worse. We can, criticize this policy from here until the ends of the earth, but that's the leadership of Israel has decided that that's the way they wish to conduct their business. They have no interest to go in and to destroy huge numbers of civilians who are really only not involved at all. They're just in the crossfire and there's no reason to do so. So, we could certainly destroy Gaza and create, an absolute barren landscape there if that was what the leadership decided to do. But there is no possibility that that's going to happen anytime soon.
No, I would certainly hope not, because as we keep saying, there are also countless number of civilians who are pretty much just as much victims to the Palestinian
Absolutely.
Islamic Jihad as well as Hamas.
Absolutely. We should remember that this action is not necessarily supported by all Gazans, admittedly, because of the brainwashing and because of the way in which news and the adherence to government is required in Gaza. A lot of the civilians are celebrating and are showing, that they're happy about all of this. But in reality, I think that they just want to get on and create a good future for their families as much as we do. I don't think that they're any different from us in many respects.
I certainly would hope not. It is 8:00. Anthony Reich, thank you, as always, for a very, very informative report, and especially this week when things were so fluid in Israel. Wishing you a very, very peaceful weekend, a Shabbat Shalom, and we'll catch you on Monday morning.